How we have been linking the descendants of Esau with the battles of the last days to annihilate God's kingdom. We ended last week in Ezekiel 38 with Gog and Magog, chief prince of Meshach and Tubal, ascending over the restored nation Israel like a cloud, and in the 10th verse, 38th chapter, at the same time, it shall also come to pass that at the same time shall things come into thy mind, and thou shalt think an evil thought. Thou shalt say, I will go up to the land of unwalled villages. Now, if you're at Moscow and go up, you ain't going to get to Israel very fast if you identify Israel solely with Palestine. There is a two-pronged attack in the last days. And the linkage that we have been tracing is that it's a fulfillment of the ancient prophecies about Amalek, the descendants of Esau. Now, lots of people do not know that Esau had more than one wife. Not an unusual practice in those days, particularly if they picked up any of the habit patterns of their father Abraham. Esau not only had a wife that was a descendant of Ishmael, and that's a link up some people are unaware of who don't study the Bible closely. He married two Hittite women. And each of these descendants can be traced. Now, we have not yet taken the jump from the disappearance of the Amalekites from the obvious historical path in their final attempt to annihilate the Jews about 70 A.D. We've not yet linked them all the way to Gog, chief prince of Rosh, literally. And I don't intend to today. That's not the subject today. I must return to some dangling, lest I lose the art. Don't get your hopes up. But we have stated, which is rare for me, that Gog, chief prince of Russia as we know it today, is none other than the descendants of Esau, up to their old game, forever committed, and as Exodus has declared, in God's plan, forever committed, perpetually from generation to generation, to fight against God's kingdom. We have said, it's descendants of Esau that rule or will rule Russia when the end comes. In prophesying against Gog and Magog in Ezekiel 38, page 942, if you have a Bible like mine, if you don't, Ezekiel 38, can I say, I've been kind of heavy the last couple of Sundays. Is that driving you away? 17th verse. The 16th ends identifying the person to whom the verse is addressed, O God, before their eyes. We're not suggesting all the people in Russia are descendants of Esau. There was a special on the news just this past week indicating that Russia will have a problem in that the Muslim population will quickly outnumber the rest of Russia's population. With families of 7 to 10 children, the Muslims are rapidly becoming the majority population in South Central Russia. I'm not suggesting that all the people, though I put that little footnote in of the news last week, in Russia are descendants of Esau, nor are all followers of the Muslim faith descendants of Esau. It is God, the chief prince, the ruling body of Russia, that will trace its descendancy to the Amalekites, the descendants of Esau. I just stated that flat. I haven't traced it all through yet. We will. But I just want to give you a verse. Lots of people who read the Bible through in 82 just race right by it. O Gog, 16th verse, that's the subject, 17th verse now. Thus saith the Lord God, art thou he? How many notice that the word art is in italics, added by the translators, because the King James people didn't want to make the connection, so they just asked the question. Scratch it out. It's not in the original. Thus saith the Lord God, this is the way it should read, thou he of whom I have spoken in old time by my servants, the prophets of Israel, which prophesied in those days many years that I would bring thee against them. Many years before Ezekiel gave this prophecy, the prophets in Israel had prophesied that in the last days, thou he of whom I have spoken in old time by my servants, the prophets of Israel, which prophesied in those days many years, that I would bring thee against them. Only an understanding that God is the final expression of Esau, the Amalekites, the Edomites, those of Mount Seir. Can that verse be true? If Russia is a new happening on the scene, with no roots in the ancient enemy of Israel, the perpetual enemy of Israel, Esau, then it would have to be translated a question, this 17th verse, and the answer would be no. But because Russia will be ruled by the ancient descendants of Esau, the last day expression and the subsequent annihilation of Gog and Magog and its followers is the fulfillment of the perpetual enmity between Esau and Israel, the kingdom of God. That's why peace talks will never work. Peace talks will never work. I want you to know that I, for example, remain undecided in my political vote and wouldn't tell you what it was if I were decided. I'm not interested in teaching people to vote the way I vote. I'm teaching people to think and to understand the Bible, and then as my message is on individual freedom in every area, do your own thing. But I have to say, from the biblical prophetic frame, the best thing I can say for Ronald Reagan is the Russians haven't, until recently, wanted to talk to him. And like it or lump it, with all the peace activists in the world, the Russians just a little bit fear us. For the first time in a long time, they don't know what to do with the old hard head who badmouthed the communists for so many years. And we're feeling the seepage of the liberal press putting the pressure on as they have for years. Now, I came out publicly last week and said, I'm worried about the religious right. I'm afraid the bully that was needed to beat the way out of the bully that had ruled for so long, liberalism and humanism, might get too big for its britches. I don't like anybody with so much power they can dominate our thinking. And even if I agree with their thinking, when they tell me I have to agree with them, I start arguing. But the liberal press will continue to keep that pressure on. Talk. 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 They'll go to Russia and they will sympathize with the Russians who feel badly about our president who said they were an evil empire. What in the hell are they if they aren't an evil empire? And no matter what the liberal press says, if a choice were given for 10 days, how many people in the United States want to go to Russia? All who want to go can go. And how many people in Russia want to go to the United States? And all who want to go can go. The avalanche would flow our way, not the other way around. I do not necessarily think that it is the prerogative of one political party to make peace through talking and the other political party to maintain peace through power. That's not really an ancient identity platform of either party. And I would like, as a preacher, to be free to preach from historic roots and from biblical fact. And the biblical fact is, there's never going to be a peace made with the descendants of Esau except the peace that points a cannon at their reproductive capacity. That says, thou shalt not, or thy descendants shall not be. And I refuse to bow to the premise that cocking a cannon at my front door to deter the desire of a burglar to enter
indicates a desire to shoot somebody. My desire is he stay off my property. However, I want him to know he'll be ventilated if he comes in. Because once a burglar wants in, talk won't keep him out. He's past that stage. But fear of singing soprano might. Now, not every evangelist on TV will talk as spiritually as I do. Spirituality is the expressions of the Spirit. The thing God's best at is revelation. He communicates well. I don't know what those fellows say. But I understand that most men fear a required state of soprano in the choir. Therefore, the guarantee of that result makes them pause and think before movement. Save it up for a while. It has nothing to do with political parties. It has nothing to do with the current president. There are some matters that are above political parties that have to do with biblical fact. If Russia is not Esau, then I'm prepared to yield. Maybe we can wait them out and a generation will come along we can talk to. But if the Bible must rule, and if, as I have maintained, God demonstrated it fully to some, though the 17th verse raises a powerful consideration. If Russia is ruled by Esau, there will never be peace with the descendants of Esau, the Amalekites, until the King of Kings and Lord of Lords comes and beats the way out of them and establishes his kingdom, and the kingdoms of this world become the kingdoms of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And if the Bible be true, and Russia be ruled by Esau, it's stupid to make the first move of dismantling and think that by turning the other cheek or talking to them, peace can come. You line up the cannons at their vital organs. And it matters not what some people say, that both sides have enough weapons to annihilate the world three times over. It's not what we have, it's what they think we have. And if they think, knowing the same facts, that even though they as well as us know that there are enough weapons to blow up the world five times over, but if they think it gives them an edge to have more, we better have more of the more, and we have the capacity to have more of the more. And that is the logic that says they are a world troublemaker. They are an evil empire. They are a criminal empire. And the only way you keep them in check is to let them know they'll get worse than they've conceived if they move. All of that stands on the logic of whether or not God's in control. You say, well, with that logic, man may blow himself up. That's true. Same Bible says, God has to shorten the times.
in the last days to keep man from doing it. But he is in control of times and seasons, and he will guarantee that we don't annihilate ourselves. Now, go to Daniel. In the second chapter of Daniel, world empires are outlined in a vision given to Nebuchadnezzar. We haven't done this for a while. Most of you know it already. Some of the people who listen, not as well. There is a head of gold, followed by arms, breast, or chest of silver. Literally, followed by belly and sides of brass. Followed by legs of iron. Followed by feet and toes of iron and clay. Nebuchadnezzar has the dreams, calls his soothsayers together, says, tell me the dream and tell me the interpretation. They can't do it. They say, tell us the dream, we'll give you the interpretation. He was too smart for that. He was going to annihilate all the soothsayers until someone told him about Daniel. Daniel came, asked time to pray. He and the three Hebrew children prayed, came to Nebuchadnezzar, told him the dream, told him the interpretation thereof. Thy kingdom is the head. After thee will come another kingdom, Persian, or the Medo-Persian kingdom. After that will come another kingdom, which Bible scholars have seen, and subsequent verses enable the interpretation, Grecian. Legs of iron, trampling everything, Rome. Then a gap occurs, because in the last days of the ten toes mingled with iron and clay, and there's some question by some whether the feet comprise a fifth kingdom somewhere in between, but in the last days, the ten-toed kingdom is a temporary kingdom that will be united in the last days under Antichrist. And in the days of those ten-toed kingdoms, the harlot woman church will be destroyed and Antichrist will come to power. Having interpreted that, by the way, then finally a stone kingdom, cut without hands, grows to a great mountain after smashing the image in its entirety. The toes, the feet, the legs, the sides, the breast, the head are all smashed, and the stone kingdom grows to become a great mountain. Now, everybody in evangelical Christianity has interpreted the stone kingdom to be Christ. Let me just say, it's Christ's kingdom. But it's always been here, ever since he set it up and gave the promise to the perpetual condition of the throne of David. And that passage needs to be looked at in terms of the growth of the stone kingdom in its entirety, the house of Judah and Israel united with their king, participating in the smashing of the kingdoms that have sought to resist perpetually the throne and the kingdom of God. A few chapters later, Daniel, move over. That was Daniel 2. seventh chapter, page 968. Am I boring you?
No, sir.
I've covered this before, but I want to gestalt it now with more information that you have. In Daniel 7, this is Daniel 2. In Daniel 7, Daniel has a dream. First year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head upon his bed. I always have these problems with the King James. I'll bet there are people who have read this 100 times, never really caught what it's saying here. Had visions of his head upon his bed. That's enough to scare the liver out of you going out the gate. Here I am sleeping away, all my parts whole. And when I go to sleep, there's just my head there on the bed. Then he wrote the dream and told the sum of the matters. Daniel spake and said, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven strove upon the great sea. And four great beasts came up from the sea, diverse, one from another. The first was like a lion, had eagle's wings. With eagle's wings. I beheld till the wings thereof were plucked. It was lifted up from the earth and made to stand upon the feet as a man, and a man's heart was given to it. Behold, another beast, a second, like to a bear. And it raised up itself on the one side, and it had three ribs in the mouth of it between the teeth of it. And they said thus unto it, Arise, devour much flesh. The three ribs said that to him. After this I beheld, and lo, another like a leopard. Another like a leopard, which had upon the back of it four wings of a fowl. The beast had also four heads, and dominion was given it. After this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, and strong exceedingly. And it had great iron teeth. It devoured and brake in pieces, and stamped the residue with the feet of it, and it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. Nondescript beast. 10 horns. If you think it's hot, and how many think it's hot? And some of you are seeing me preach more slowly than I normally preach. In 55 years, this is the first time, and I've preached in tropical heat, that I've had to come over here and lean on this organ a couple of times, and I'm seeing spots in front of my eyes. Turn some lights out, Joe, and give me a little relief, because I can finish this sermon without the lights being this bright on me. You can have a shadow pastor for one Sunday. People have wondered for years. Some people wonder why I wear that leather coat on TV. They say, isn't it hot? Turn them out. I mean, get these spots off of me. I don't need them. You're trying to do a dimmer technique. Make me dark, and then I'll tell you how to bring me back up. Turn them out. That's better. That's the only one I need. Just leave it alone. No, turn that last one you turned off back on. How about the big spot up there? Do I need it? Turn it off. Now, that's better. That leather coat I wear reflects. And then I sit for hours. Probably no person in the world does as much live TV as I do, and certainly not 4 and 5 and 6 hours at a time. Then I get some relief when the music plays and we turn the lights off, and that coat keeps me from suddenly, with the air conditioning that everybody else in the room needs, chilling me as I'm drenched with perspiration, with the lights off, I can sit there and the coat keeps me warm in that substance, and when the lights are on, it reflects. Maybe it's time for me to tell people that this Dacron shiny substance suit material went out about 10 years ago, if you're stylish. I've worn them for years because they reflect the light. I finally bought myself a suit. And what a mistake I made. It's very light and very flimsy, but it's wool. And this suit, I'm beginning to learn, soaks up those bright lights and that heat until I'm in a sauna. And what other preacher talks to his people like this? Now, like it or lump it, stylish pastor or no, I'm going back to my Dacron. Because back, I may just shed the suit entirely. And my mother's dream will finally come to pass. And I'm going to play operator this afternoon on the TV. If I get Jesus on the line, I'm going to ask how I can do that trick that Daniel did. Just set my head down here to preach on Sunday morning. And I'll take the rest of me to the beach. And since the rest of me will kind of look funny without a head, he'll probably clear the beach, and I'll have it all to myself. Now that we've got all this light situation under control, what was happening is when I got up here under this blackboard, I not only had all of those lights, I had these. And all of a sudden I saw that camera start moving. And it wasn't moving. Nondescript beast. You can see me, can't you? Who cares about all this television fancy fall to raw? You bringing me some water, Mike? I was hoping somebody would take the hint. I'm not sick. I got hot. Thank you. Do I dare? I like wool and cloth fabrics, but they eat up the light and swallow the heat. Why, I tell all you men, you can come here wearing a cotton shirt, T-shirt. You don't have to dress like you do in some churches. Some churches, all they got's the dress. Mm-hmm. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom there were three of the first horns plucked up. Little horn. Am I boring you?
Lord.
Little horn. Before whom there were three of the first horns plucked up by the roots, and behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of man, and a mouth speaking great things. And I beheld till the thrones were cast down. And the Ancient of Days did sit, garments being described. The end of time is discussed, and then Daniel, having seen that vision, was grieved, verse 15. Grieved in my spirit, I can't tell you what a difference turning those lights out made. I may be able to get going here now. You memorize all the switches, Joe. So when I say kill it, you'll know which ones to turn off fast in the future. Daniel was grieved. I came near, he says, unto one of them that stood by, and asked him the truth of all this. So he told me, made me know the interpretation of the things. These great beasts, which are four kings, which shall arise out of the earth. Four kings, which shall arise out of the earth. Why are you going so slow, you say? Because there is a large school of thought in prophecy that has interpreted this whole chapter and their whole theories of prophecy on these two words right here in the King James. Shall arise. Now, you thought when we got on this, we're going to do what we always do. I teach with a Gestalt theory. Cover the same ground, all of it. Fit in another piece every time. You will read books, and one very popular, you may not have encountered it yet, current preacher in prophecy, builds his whole case on these two words. Four kings which shall arise out of the earth. And the minute he lays his case on those two words, he is able to debate and argue with and discount the traditional, and there are times, rarely, but times, traditions are right. The traditional interpretation, which has the lion equated with the Babylonian Empire, the bear, higher on one side than the other, with the Medo-Persian Empire, the leopard, moving so fast with the Grecian Empire, and the nondescript beast with the Roman Empire, and the ten horns with the ten toes, and the little horn with Antichrist. But this school of thought says, when Daniel was prophesying, it was the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon. And Nebuchadnezzar was dead, and the Babylonian Empire was about to fall in the reign of Belshazzar, and was already in existence and had already peaked out. Therefore, this seventh chapter must not be interpreted traditionally. The lion cannot be Babylon, because Babylon already exists, and the prophecy says these are four kings which shall future arise. Makes sense, doesn't it? Therefore, all the preachers that have interpreted Daniel and his beasts
as equated with Babylon, Persia, Greece, and Rome are wrong. Because these are kingdoms which shall arise. Let's go home. Might as well quit. Like my uncle said, God wants you to understand the Bible. Why didn't you write the damn thing till you could? Remember old Uncle Bob? Let's look at this close. Doesn't that bother you a little? I mean, how can it be Babylon when Babylon is already in existence? And these are four kings with shallow eyes. The King James is good enough for Paul. By cracky, it's going to be good enough for me. And plus the fact, this is Old Testament language. And the Lord speaks that language in heaven. These great beasts which are four kings which shall arise out of the earth. The words being translated, shall arise, are Malbim. This verb in the Hebrew, followed by Mim in the Hebrew, we're now down to the original consonants that were written there, always and certainly usually it, not always, my conviction is always, carries the connotation, shall arise, it's a getting up. But the Hebrew original means literally getting up to leave. You ever been to anybody's house? In order to leave, you got to get up. You get up to leave. Has nothing to do with arrival at the house. It has nothing to do with entrance onto the stage. It is exclusively getting up after you've already been there to leave. Now, you can translate it shall arise, but a big difference now. The angel explains to Daniel the purpose of the vision being given to Daniel is not to show the greatness of the kingdoms. That's been done already in Nebuchadnezzar's vision. The purpose is to show their demise. The way in which they will, every one of them, get up in order to leave. Departure is the meaning, not entrance. Some evangelical preachers would do well to subscribe to the Art Scroll Tanakh series, probably the finest biblical exposition by Jewish scholars in this century. There is a bookstore out in the valley, somewhere on Ventura, here in California, that carries the series. Out by this little old shopping center, there's a restaurant there called, I think, the Melting Pot, and it's about a little past Studio City on Ventura Boulevard. I checked it just to see what they were saying. Identical. The Jewish scholars are well aware that what Daniel was seeing was not kingdoms, none of which can exist prior to the vision of Daniel 7, but rather the final happening of each of these kingdoms who shall get up to leave.
including the fact that though the Babylonian Empire, the head, and the Persian Empire, the silver, and the Grecian Empire, the brass, and the Roman Empire, the iron, are analogous to the lion, the bear, the leopard, and the beast. The meaning of Daniel 7 is, each of these, the kings thereof, or the rulers thereof, shall get up to leave. But there shall come a kingdom that shall be established forever and ever. And of that kingdom, there is no end. It took more time than I intended, because I have a congregation of intelligent people who read. And the ever-increasing desire to come up with something new and spectacular in prophecy is causing a new movement to arise in prophecy, taking this theory. Well, now I can say that all prophecy follows the law of double fulfillment. When you go to the Antichrist chapters in the book of Revelation, you will find that elements of each of these kingdoms are to be involved in the final kingdom arrayed against the church and against the kingdom of heaven. It'll be arrayed against the church as it takes shape toward the end and the spirit of Antichrist is at work. It'll be arrayed against the house of Israel and the house of Judah in tribulation time until Armageddon ruins it. Chapter 13, Revelation. You'll see Antichrist's kingdom take shape in the book of Revelation. The kingdom that will flow out of the ten-toed kingdom of Daniel 2 and will flow out of the ten-horn kingdom, two horns of which will be uprooted by the little horn. You find in Revelation 13 that kingdom taking shape. Page 303, if you've got a Bible like mine. Revelation 13. And I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and upon his horns ten crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was like a leopard. I'll tell you why, like a leopard. Antichrist is the little horn that will rise up, uproot two of the ten-toed or ten-horned kingdom to be formed in the latter days. They will give him authority. He won't conquer them. And he will rule over them through a gift of chairmanship a short time. Then out of the bottomless pit will come a beast, demon, that will literally possess him and give him supernatural power. That demon that will come out of the bottomless pit is described in the book of Revelation as the one that was and is not and will be again, wounded in the head, but coming back again. When this ten-horned and ten-toed kingdom is formed again, the power that motivated and drove and gave Alexander the Great his great abilities until he could conquer the world so speedily that he wept at the thought of no portions left to conquer. When he was cut off in his prime, a subsequent vision of Daniel has four successor rulers, his generals, rule but not with his power, because the demon force
was put in the bottomless pit to await the day of Antichrist and the little horn, and that power will come forth and empower Antichrist supernaturally. And it will be a resurrected expression of Alexander the Great's old Grecian empire, that portion of the ten-horned, ten-toed kingdom, which is why you can expect Antichrist to come out of southeastern Turkey, Syria, northwestern Iraq, or northwestern Iran, out of the territory of the Seleucid Empire will come the little horn. He doesn't have to conquer the world. He only has to uproot two. And the wars in the Mideast among the Arab nations today, particularly Iraq, Iran, the role of Syria, Turkey, only in that territory must he win a violent confrontation over two. Then the rest of a restored, ancient Roman Empire territory, ten-toed, ten-horned, will give him power because he comes up with a peace plan for the Middle East. Only after he is given power because of a formula of peace will he become possessed with the beast that is released out of the bottomless pit and reveal his true colors and take shape as Antichrist in full-orbed expression. That kingdom will have, Revelation 13, the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard. His feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. Like a leopard, because it'll be the restored Grecian Empire. Feet as the feet of a bear, because the seat of his initial power will be in the territory of the ancient Medo-Persian Empire, which is why you watch the center of gravitation in conflict in the Middle East go to that northern section of the Persian Gulf, where the threat to the oil lines of the world flows from. That's the territory of the ancient Medo-Persian Empire. The Medes, up on the high Iranian plateau, the Persians, to the north and west of the Persian Gulf, led by Cyrus, conquered the Medes and established the Medo-Persian Empire. The feet, the base of his power then, will be where the bear had his base. His mouth as the mouth of a lion. For out of ancient Babylon, founded by Nimrod, and that wife of his, Semiramis, who spawned the substitute faith of Babylon, with their own version of the incarnation, Tammuz, born as a sunbeam, conceived as a sunbeam, born to reproduce the life of Nimrod, who was seated in the sun itself as Baal. The Babylonian worship patterns that through Alexandria, Egypt, and via Pergamos and the mystery religions into Rome, conquered the church through the Middle Ages and have given the basic worship practices for centuries of ritualistic Catholic practice, from the round host and the sunburst monstrous to the religious calendar and the 40 days of penitence and penance, which is none other than the weeping over Tammuz, the Babylonian religion that has produced Easter, a cognate of Ishtar, a cognate name for Semiramis. The Babylonian religion, Satan's counterfeit, will be the voice that speaks of the lion out of Babylon. From his mouth will come the message of Babylon, and the dragon or Satan gives him his power
his seat and great authority. The next verse speaks of none other than the beast, the demon, that empowered Alexander the Great and Willem Tyr, Antichrist. So to those who understand double fulfillment in prophecy, all four kings will be represented in the end. But the passages of Daniel 7 speak of four kings, including Belshazzar, who would get up to leave also as the crushing of the Babylonian Empire would come, and each successor king. In that frame, the nondescript, non-named beast with such power that is analogous to the legs and is the Roman Empire that follows the Grecian receives interpretation and expansion from the mouth of Ezra. Now back to this little book. Everybody ought to have one. Am I boring you? The Apocrypha, an American translation by Edgar J. Goodspeed. In the Apocrypha is the second book of Esdras. Now, who is Esdras? Again, I know most of my people know this, but we have new people every Sunday. Ezra is the Old Testament name. Esdras is the Greek name. If you were to take a Greek translation, as the Septuagint is, of the Old Testament, and you were going through the books, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, when you come to Ezra and Nehemiah, you would read in the Greek, Esdras, not Ezra. It's just the Greek cognate for Ezra. Now, in the King James, they've anglicized it as Ezra. He wrote another book. The Apocrypha included it. I've done this before. King James good enough for Paul? I won't read the introduction. But when the King James was written, the Apocrypha was part of it. Second Ezra, or Esdras, was in the King James. It took the Puritans to take it out. Don't give me the argument that modern scholarship has so-called proven that it was written at a date later than Ezra lived. The same scholars say Daniel was written at a date later than Daniel lived in order to get around the accuracy of the prophecy. Their scholarship is all wet, and we spend hours in one message on the dates and the reasons why Daniel could not have been written at the date these so-called scholars say had the words written. Daniel was dictated by Daniel. Ezra was dictated by Ezra. And second Ezra was in the King James. The Puritans took it out. And finally, the American and British Bible Society axed it. The King James had it in. Now let's look what Ezra has to say. And I can move toward my conclusion rather quickly. You got it? Anybody got a copy with him? He sees a great beast also. I slept that night, and it came to pass on the second night I had a dream. It came to pass on the second night that I had a dream, and behold, there came up out of the sea an eagle. All of a sudden, now we got a new beast. There came up out of the sea an eagle. And behold, this eagle with 12 feather-covered wings and 3 heads. I looked, and behold, he spread his wings over the whole earth. And all the winds of heaven blew upon him, and the clouds gathered about him. And I looked, and out of his wings grew additional wings. And they became small, dwarfish wings. But his heads were resting. The middle head was greater than the other heads. But it, too, was resting like them. And I looked, and behold, remember, this book was in the King James. You must also understand that a certain theology ruled among the Puritans that ruled out a prophecy like this. I looked, and behold, the eagle flew with his wings to reign over the earth and over those who live on it. Now, if Daniel's prophecy of the future, and all these animals have fulfillment, and if Ezra is part of the same Bible, what a tragedy that this vision of this eagle has been denied ever since the 1800s work of the Puritans' successors in the American Bible Society and the British eliminated this from all the Bibles. I want to know about this eagle. I saw that everything under heaven was subject to him. No one opposed him, nor any creature that was on the earth. So the eagle, not the heads, ruled over everything. I looked, and behold, the eagle rose upon his talons and uttered his voice to his wings, saying, do not all watch at once, sleep, each in his own place, and watch by turns, but let the heads be reserved for the last. And I looked, and behold, the voice did not come from his heads, but from the midst of his body. Now, secret societies has been a concern of historians for years. You've heard me teach on tragedy and hope, and how a member of the elite finally came out, and his ego drove him to say, it's about time the world finds out who's really been running it, as he traced from Milner's kindergarten and Cecil Rhodes' round table clear through to the Trilateral Commission and the Council on Foreign Relations. There are those that are looking at the Club of Rome and asking, is it possibly the ten-toed kingdom? And when Halloween comes, we will talk about the preordained zone and that secret society that just may control and hold whatever that treasure was that made that priest rich in holy blood, holy grail. Is there a subterranean elite group that pulls the chain? Or is this speaking of simple supernatural demon forces? We'll see, won't we? Now, I have covered this eagle vision speedily as I'm introducing it today. Would you like me to camp on it a while? I think it is one area. Let's see. I looked, and behold, the voice did not come. I won't stay all day. I mean, in a series of messages.
You better believe I'm going to camp on it the final 5-6 minutes that I'm here today. I looked and behold, the voice did not come from his head, but from the midst of his body. I hope we got some of these in the bookstore, and if we don't, by next Sunday, we'll have enough for everybody. You need a copy of this. Then you'll read ahead of me and get confused. Some of you. I looked, and behold, the voice did not come from his head, but from the midst of his body. I counted his additional wings. Behold, there were 8 of them. What do they mean? And I looked, and behold, on the right side, one wing arose, and it reigned over the whole earth. And it came to pass after it had reigned, and let me just say, later sections of the verse clarify, the look is northward, so right side is east. I looked, and behold, on the right side, one wing arose, and it reigned over the whole earth. What's that? First, the eagle reigns. Now, one wing on the right side. Came to pass after it had reigned that it came to an end and disappeared. Now, I'm starting to get as interested in these wings as I've been for years in toes. I really shake up Colonel Sanders when I go get chicken. I said, I always say, give me all chicken boobs. Just want you to know, I caught the whistle back there. I don't miss anything. The second arose and reigned, and it ruled a long time. Came to pass after it had reigned. Now we had an eagle reigning, and then we got wings taken over. That's interesting to me. Now, I've never been a wingman, but I'm getting interested. The second arose and reigned and ruled a long time. Came to pass after it had reigned that it also came to an end, so that it disappeared like the first. Behold, a voice was heard saying to it, listen, you who have ruled the earth so long, I make this proclamation to you before you begin to disappear, before you get up to leave. No one after you will rule as long as you have ruled, or even half as long. You ought to be able to locate that in history. Then the third wing raised itself up and ruled like the former one. And it also disappeared. And so it fell to all the wings, one by one, to be emperor. And then to disappear again. Even if this book, as the critics say, was written years after Ezra, but before the New Testament began, he's still talking about things that go after Christ. Third wing raised itself up, ruled like the former ones, it disappeared. So it fell to all the wings, one by one, to be emperor, and then to disappear again. I looked, and behold, in due time, the additional wings on the right side raised themselves up in order to be emperor. There were some of them who succeeded, but immediately disappeared. Some of them raised themselves up, but did not remain emperor. And afterward I looked, and behold, the 12 wings and 2 little wings disappeared. And nothing was left on the eagle's body except the 3 heads that were resting and 6 little wings. Now we're getting way down the trail. 3 heads, 6 little wings. I looked, and behold, from the 6 little wings, two separated. Two of the six, leaving four, and they came over, staying under the head that was on the right side. Now, why didn't those two little wings go to the head that was in the middle or the head that was on the left side? Because those two little wings went over under the head on the right side. Got it? And I looked, and behold, these four additional wings, well, let's say, the two separated and stayed under the head that was on the right side, but four stayed in their places. I looked, and behold, these four additional wings planned to raise themselves up and be emperors. And I, now the test of the prophets, whether it comes true, that's what we're going to check. And I looked, and behold, these four additional wings planned to raise themselves up and be emperor. And I looked, and behold, one raised itself up of the four and immediately disappeared. And the second, it disappeared more quickly than the first. I looked, and behold, the two that were left also planned to reign. But while they were planning it, behold, one of the resting heads that was in the middle awoke. For it was greater than the other two heads. And I saw how the two heads were united with it. And behold, the head turned with the ones that were with it and ate up the additional wings that planned to reign. Bang, 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 bang. That means all of these four that were left are now eaten up. The middle head raised itself and the other head's joint ate it up. But these two wings are still under the head that's on the right. Moreover, this head made itself master of the whole earth, ruled very oppressively over its inhabitants, had more power over the world than all the wings that had gone before. Afterward, I looked, and behold, the middle head suddenly disappeared, just like the wings had done. Now, if I leave anybody in the middle of this sentence, you'll want to come back next Sunday. The head suddenly disappeared, one in the middle, just the wings had done. But the two heads remained. They also reigned over the earth and over its inhabitants. And I looked, and behold, the head on the right side that had the two little wings with it ate up the one on the left. Now we got the head on the right. We'll call it the right head, with two wings. Then I heard a voice saying to me, "Look before you and think about what you see. How could you keep from thinking about it?" I want you to understand this was in the King James. You understand that? Before them Puritans started getting involved. There are a lot of things the Puritans did I don't agree with. I looked, and behold, what seemed to be a lion rose out of the forest roaring. Now we've got another lion. What was the basic nature of Babylon? To imitate Christ. They came up with their substitute incarnation. Now the Lion of Lions, the tribe of Judah. I looked, and behold, what seemed to be a lion rose out of the forest roaring. I heard how he uttered a man's voice to the eagle and spoke, saying, "Listen, and I'll talk to you, eagle head. The Most High says to you, are you not all that's left of the four animals that I made to reign in my world? Well, you know, it's almost criminal that this has been taken out of God's prophetic package by those dumb Puritans. The Most High says to you, are you not all that's left of the four animals that I made to reign in my world, so that through them the end of my times might come? You're the fourth. You've conquered all the animals that are past. You've held the world in subjection, in great terror, and the whole earth with harsh oppression, and you've lived so long in the world with deceit, You've not judged the earth with truth. Now, you can count on a communist to always be a communist. Lying is an approved method with them. And you want to talk to people like this? Now I'm back to where my message started. You have persecuted the meek, hurt the peaceable, you hated those who tell the truth and love liars. You've destroyed the dwellings of the fruitful, torn down the walls of those who did you no harm, and your insolence has reached the Most High, and your pride has reached the Mighty One. And the Most High has looked at His times, and behold, they are ended. He looked at His calendar. You see, with God, every time is set. That's why those feast days are the set times of the Lord. The Most High has looked at His times. He set them in motion. And His ages and His times are ended and completed. Therefore, you will surely disappear, you eagle, and your dreadful wings, and your cruel talons, and your whole worthless body. Let's love them communists. Your whole worthless body, so that the whole earth may be freed from your violence, and the whole earth be refreshed and relieved and hope for the justice and mercy of Him who made her. And it came to pass while the lion was saying these words to the eagle that I looked, and behold, the head that had been left disappeared. And the two wings. That's all that's left now. Got to hand it to these two wings. I mean, these two wings, two little wings, that's all that's left. And the two wings which had gone over to it, the head, on the right, lifted themselves up to reign. And their reign was short and full of uproar. I looked, and behold, they also disappeared. Now, we've been a year asking the question, who are those two wings? Are you interested?
Yes, sir.
See you next Sunday. Don't clap when I say see you next Sunday. I'm afraid I hope you're clapping because of what you'll get next Sunday. I'm about done. Just hang tight. I looked, and behold, they, the wings, also disappeared. And the whole body of the eagle was burned. How do you burn the whole body? And the earth was panic-stricken. Just maybe. Just maybe. An awful big bomb may go off. But it's going to be on them. I'm telling you, God's going to have it come out His way, no matter what the talkers think. And the whole earth was panic-stricken. Then, because of great disturbance of mind and great fear, I awoke and I said to my spirit, behold, you brought this upon me. I talk that way to whomever God has assigned to guide me. You brought this upon me because you tried to search out the ways of the Most High. Can you imagine this poor prophet telling his angel off or telling the spirit that's with him off because that spirit's meddling around trying to find out what God's going to do? Kind of an interesting scene. You damn spirit, you! I never wanted to hear about this. Now you've upset me by telling me this. You're just too curious for both of our good. Behold, I'm still weary in mind and very weak in my spirit. There's not the least strength left in me because of the great fear which I felt this night. So now I will entreat the Most High to strengthen me to the end. And I said, Sovereign Lord, if I found favor in your sight, and if I am counted upright by you beyond many, and if my prayer has indeed come up before your face, strengthen me and show your slave the meaning and explanation of this dreadful vision so as to comfort my soul fully. For you thought me worthy to be shown the end of times and the last of them. And he said to me, this is the meaning of the vision that you've seen. As for the eagle that you saw rising from the sea, it is the fourth kingdom that appeared in a vision to your brother Daniel. This is the vision to his brother Daniel. It's this beast that was not described by Daniel. Sometimes Bible translators and Bible scholars call it nondescript. This eagle is that fourth beast that appeared in a vision to your brother Daniel, but it was not explained to him as I now explain it to you. Behold, the days are coming when... And he then begins to explain this fourth beast. Now, I preach for one message, that God's in control. God looks at his set times in this vision and says, the time has come. Nobody's going to end this world before God's ready to end it. Nobody's going to pull a chain that changes God's plan. God is in control. I'm not fearful of this beast. He's going to get stomped and his whole body burned. Now, Ezra should be put back in the King James. If I ever print a Bible, it'll be in there as 1st and 2nd Ezra. This beast is this final nondescript beast, and the prophecy traces the history through the wings, through the heads, through the final two wings, and the work of the lion, the changes to a man with a host of people behind him. Now, I've come to this point many times. I'm moving, as you can see today, slowly. I'm not going to preach all day. This interpretation says that vision was not explained to Daniel, but I now explain it to you. Behold, the days are coming when a kingdom will rise on the earth. That's where I take up next Sunday. See you later.